Hello, everybody, and welcome to the first official Survivor Know-It-Alls for Australian Survivor Season 2. I could not be more excited. I have woken up at 5 a.m. before work, and I am sitting here talking to someone who I think is going to be a really big help in breaking down a huge week of Australian Survivor. He is the man who I can verify that he does not own a Velcro wallet. It is Rob Sestanino.
Happy days, Rob.
How are you going, mate?
I am more excited than a duck's nuts to be here. Am I using these right?
It's funny you bring that up, Rob, because all you listeners out there, stay tuned for the end of the podcast. We have a little game. We have a little game that we are going to put Rob on the spot for. Talking about the very thing, some Australian idioms. So you set us up nicely for that one.
Hey, and don't talk about AK like that.
I never would. Trust me, I never would. It's going to be the duck's nuts. That's how you use it, Rob. That's okay. How you use it.
Sounds good. I'm very excited to talk about Australian Survivor that I got to talk about so much of it last year and talk about a wonderful contestant named Nick, who is rather
Nickish.
Are they
going to say Andy? Yeah. Are they going to say Andy?
Yes. So I'm very excited. I thought this was a very fun first three nights of Australian Survivor.
It was. People kind of called me out and said the exact opposite, but I think that episode two was by far the best episode of Australian Survivor of both seasons, apart from the finale last year. And I was in 20 of them last year. Mm-hmm. This, I feel like this was better. This was so much more fun. The pace was much quicker. You didn't feel like it was dragging. I absolutely loved it. So I've got heaps that I want to kind of break down with you today. And I'm so glad that you would come on because it's really weird. Me kind of running the show with you as the guest. I don't know. It doesn't feel natural. It doesn't feel natural.
But it's fun. We're doing it down under. This is how we're going to do it completely upside down. And I wasn't that excited about Australian Survivor coming back, but after I watched these three episodes, now I think I might stick around.
Excellent. Well, we probably because we traumatized you last year with how long it was. So
I'll at least be listening to the podcast the whole way through.
Excellent. Good. Well, this season has been so big already, and I have been tweeting up a storm on Twitter. So if you want to get in on the action, follow me at Nick Idanza, obviously at Rob Sestanino. And there's plenty of talk out there about Survivor. We've got American survivors watching it. We've got New Zealand people watching it now because of the podcast last season. And the little community that is an offshoot of your community, Rob, is growing. And I couldn't be happier.
We are an interconnected tribe of Survivor fans.
That's it. We're almost as big as the tribes on Australian Survivor this year.
Yes. All the people who are listening to these podcasts, almost as big as the Asanga tribe. That we almost have as many people.
Agreed. So I want to get your overarching thoughts before we dive in because there's so much to talk about. What are you feeling about the opening, the premiere? Because it was a big premiere, and then we have this start off with this epic marooning. Tell me your thoughts. What? How did you feel watching that?
Well, to me, I never get too pumped up about the marooning, the challenges, and the challenges are they do a great job. There's like, you know, five parts. I think the challenges are probably even tougher in Australian Survivor than in the U.S. version. But to me, it all comes down to the characters and the gameplay. And I think that they really did a great job with casting this season because there's a lot of standouts and a lot of wild cards in the mix that I think are going to potentially make this very fun, where with all due respect to the first season of Australian Survivor, I don't feel like that there were that many live wires that were out there in the cast. There were, you know, a few people that were sort of like trying to play an interesting game. And then everybody else was sort of, for the most part, you know, you had 16, 18 people that were, you know, playing a pretty similar game. But I think that there are some people out there that have some very fun ideas.
Look, I actually agree with you. And being on season one was awesome. And I love the people I was out there with. Well, not all of them. I love most of them that
some
I was
of
out
them.
There with. But I do feel the big difference is to play this season. Like people can play. There were people last season who hadn't quite figured out what Survivor is and I or had watched it really before. I can guarantee, I think from what I've heard online is that there's only one person who had never really watched Survivor before this season. And everyone this season is really kind of like pushing this idea that we can make moves and we can play and we're not going to be held accountable for like playing, you know, mateship and stuff like that. So I think that's pretty good. And I think it set the tone really well with that marooning and the rice thing. Mm-hmm. I think that it looked like a scene from The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
Like there were just people clamoring on top of each other. Like I think that was such a cool metaphor for how this season's going to go. People literally stepping on top of each other to get where they want to go. And I thought that set the tone even more than the marine, that little rice teepee thing.
I thought we could have had a photo finish as well in that first challenge where Jared and I don't know who the other person was that he was sort of like fighting with it, but if they both would have like holding it as they were got it off the hook, I think Jonathan would have had to make a tough call. I think that it was a good thing that Jared was able to get it off cleanly.
Yeah, that's what I thought. I was like, if they're both holding it as it's hooked off, how are you? Yeah, I thought the exact same thing. But either way, it worked out, and it was a really cool way to start. I really liked that there was that whole kind of thing. If you get the rice, you get everything, or you get nothing. It was pretty intense.
Yeah, very intense. But I mean, could they give the team that got the rice a flint also? It was like, okay, great, now you have the rice, but you still don't have the flint. How many things do we need before we can get up and running with this camp?
Yeah, I thought the whole fire challenge that they did in the premiere was like a pretty big waste of time. That was my old Sanapu Beach, by the way, just throwing it out there. But I thought that bit there where they went to that, the four of them and got the fire started, we probably could have trimmed that out or added some sort of idol dilemma to that where it was like you can go for fire or you can search for an idol on this beach and whoever gets it first, the challenge ends. But look, a really good start, and I think there was some plenty of stuff to talk about. So I just had one question that I wanted to bring in before we get started. Kel Sherman asks, season two seems more strategic. Is this because it's two tribes? So I don't know if that's the reason, but what are your thoughts? Is it cast? Is it the second season effect? What do you think?
Well, I think that both of those play a factor. I do like the tribes of 12. We've never had tribes of 12 to start off in a Survivor season, at least not one that I've ever heard of. Last season, we had three tribes of eight, which was fine because, you know, tribes of eight is even a bit of a throwback to when there were two tribes of eight.
Yeah.
So we're sort of used to that. But I love big numbers and tribes with I guess I'm like the Sir Mix-a-Lot of tribes that I like. And it's
I
so
like
fun.
Big, no.
I like big tribes. Yeah. Because you have so much room to play, whereas in the tribe of six, that there's not a lot of room to move, where in a tribe of six, two people could get together and they really have all of the power. And in a tribe of eight, really, you could have four people get together and they have all the power. But in a tribe of 12, you know, like six or seven people need to get together. And then there, it's very hard to hold together a seven person alliance. We heard that a lot in the third episode about seven people isn't an alliance, and it's really not. There's very few seven person alliances in Survivor history. So at that point, you know, things start to crack into fours and threes. And I do think that we end up with some pretty exciting dynamics with a bigger tribe to start the game. The hard part is then, you know, you have on each tribe, you know, there's five or six people. You really know who they are. And then there's a lot of people that are just in the chorus right now.
Yeah, that I agree. I'm surprised to hear you say that you like the 12 because I'm a fan of it, but I've heard people online saying that, oh, people get lost, but give it time. People will come out.
We got 55 days, okay? Everybody's going to get their time in the spotlight. There's no rush.
with the 12, like, so the biggest tribal tribe that I was part of was at the merge with 13 people. Mm-hmm. And that was an absolute nightmare to keep track of 13 votes, and we all had, like, you know, 30 something days under our belt. But these people in the first, you know, three or four days, they're trying to organize 13 votes. It does kind of show people that you have to play big. You have to start, you have to get in there because you are going to get lost in the shuffle if you let seven people go walk off in the other direction.
That being said, with that group of people, like, you could, try to do something. And then also because there's so many options, you have room to sort of like make a mistake and then come back because there's somebody that could potentially emerge as a bigger problem than you. Whereas in a group of six, you sort of, you know, I felt like that, oh, AK, he's going to get Zane knighted here on that first day. And, enough time went by that somebody else ended up like he had enough time and enough people and enough votes to be able to save himself.
And thank God he did, because I love AK. Like I think AK is like my spirit animal. I love him. I think he's so fun to watch. And, you know, after the first episode, if you went on Twitter and you went into the Australian media, AK was getting roasted, like absolutely roasted. And it just kind of annoyed me. It just annoyed me because the fans of Australian Survivor last year were banging the table saying, we want game players. We want people who are going to get out there and not just sit down. This is why this season's no good, blah, blah, blah. And then you give people what they want. And then people are like, playing too much. Got to slow down. It's like, no, people are never happy. So I think that AK fulfilled what many of us wanted from last season, is that he was going to get out there. And look, he made mistakes. Absolutely. And he probably didn't take into account what happened to me last year, where you kind of step out too quick and then you're going to get cut down. And I think that, but I still think that he's so entertaining to watch.
He is very entertaining to watch. I'm so glad that he's out there. Now, I'm going to look at it a little bit differently. I wouldn't say that I'm an AK fan, but I love that he's on the show, because I think dealing with AK is going to be very interesting for all these people, because he is probably, you know, he's fine as a player. Like he's good, but he's probably half as good as he thinks he is. And so he's really getting like very mustache twirly in terms of being a villain. He's really the Survivor love child of Russell Hance and Billy Garcia. If you put these two people together, that is what we have with AK. And he's out of control and he's working on all these plans. And he's 6 days into 55. And, he's playing so hard. And he's coming up with chicken idols, but then he has real idols, and he is a joy to watch.
Yeah, he if you look at the confessional count, he is like nearly double. He could probably be like 12 other people's confessionals combined, and he has more. He is electric on screen, and he is definitely giving us what we want in terms of content. But you're right that like you if you're in a tribe with him, they said it. What is he going to do next? And I don't know how long you can keep someone like that around, like especially with like staring down the barrel of like another 50 days of the game.
Yeah. It was very fun. Everything. I mean, that second episode was so fantastic with everything going on with the chicken idol. But I even really enjoyed, you know, he made a boring vote potentially interesting on that third tribal council, where Kate and Tessa were really trying to work him, and you didn't know what he was going to do. You felt like that there was a chance that he might say, you know what, I have to go with them. And I liked how Kate and Tessa were playing that whole thing, where they were not only trying to talk to him, but they were like talking to him in front of everybody else, where people might have said, what is AK up to now? We got to get rid of him. So I did think that having such an unstable element in the equation did provide a lot of intrigue.
Absolutely. People say, you know, like, oh, AK, like so bad, such a bad player. And look, he definitely made mistakes. I think the first episode was bad for him. But this is the bit that I wanted to talk about. The second episode starts with him standing there. He has an emotional moment on the beach, whether it was real or not, we can't verify. But he says
real. I mean, it was in his confessional. I don't know what he's trying to pull on us.
No, well, the bit where I think Adam goes up to him in the dark, and then AK says, like, I've just realized it's a sprint. You know, I've dumped out, like, I've sprinted. It's a marathon. I've jumped out like Usain Bolt. And I think in that moment, I can sympathize with him, and I wonder if you can as well, where everyone is just looking at you, and you are staring at this game going, I have cooked it so early, and everyone hates me because I've been playing it at, like, a 10, right? Mm-hmm. And in that moment, he has to decide, well, how will I get myself out of this? Do I become a one or do I go to 20?
Yeah.
And I remember being in the exact same position. It's like, I'm definitely going home. do I now be the person who they think I am, but even more intensely, and try and work myself out of it? Or do I try and hope that I can just sit back and it won't be me? And that's how you have to play. You have to swing in that moment, because if you don't swing, you will go home and you will regret it for the rest of your life. And in that second episode, I think he played so well. He had the tenacity to go onto the island and find the idol. He left the string for them, and then the chicken idol. I think that was just so absurd, but absurd in the right way, because he had the real idol in his jocks. He would have. And I think that's when he makes this fake idol and is like, bam, this is the chicken idol. And I don't know if anyone's ever done that before, Rob. Can anyone, in your estimation, in your memory, has anyone made a fake idol? And we got questions about this, and I'm sorry if I don't remember who sent in the question, because I've got papers everywhere here, but have we ever had someone who has had the real idol and has made a fake idol to deter from the fact that they've got the real one?
So in terms of potentially in shows that are in Korea, I've seen something similar like this happen. But in terms of Survivor, I can't think of a person that had simultaneously a real idol and a fake idol, other than in Survivor Worlds Apart, Mike Holloway finds the real idol. Joe Anglim makes a fake idol, and Joe Anglim tries to tell Mike Holloway it's a real idol. At one point, he has possession of both, but it's very like he asks Jeff Probst to validate it. And so he should have held on to it. He should have just put it in his pocket and then just voted out Joey Amazing. But that being said, yeah, I'd love to just find out from you if you feel like, was everything that AK did intentional? Was there a plan that he followed? Because I wasn't exactly sure from a production standpoint. Now, they did not show us that he had the idol, right? That they let it be a mystery. And Survivor hasn't done that in quite some time.
A really long time.
I feel like that the last time they did that was back in, it might have been, I think, Survivor Fans versus Favorites with Amanda Kimmel. Yeah. Right. And they had done that a couple times previously, like with Gary Hogaboom back in Survivor Guatemala. But I thought I really felt like they did a great job of editing all of these episodes, because I felt like that there was very exciting the whole way through. I really was surprised that it was Adam and not AK that went out at that tribal council. And so, yeah, it was a mystery of like, what did he actually have it at that point when they went out there? Or because we didn't see him finding the idol. So we just saw like, boy, it seems like he found an idol, but we didn't know. And then he's like walking around with the chicken idol. Damn.
It's just so funny. Mike Bloom sent in a question saying like, I need you to bust out the Jeff Probst easel and try and figure out what happened that episode. But this is from what I can tell. And I'm fairly certain that there was a lot, there was a lot chopped out. And I think there are some really key parts of down. Without that information, we don't really know what it is. But my estimation is this, that he came up with this chicken idol idea, which the most ridiculous name. And I can't wait to see which barnyard animal gets its an idol next. That's I think that's really going to be fun. The cow idol.
Was it called the chicken idol because it prevents you from being the first person voted out of the game? Is that why they called it the in honor of Stephen Morris from Survivor China?
That's a zing right there. I like that. That's good.
Damn.
That's good. Damn. I thought that was good. And I think I think there's some holes in this chicken idol story, but I think he came up with that before So at that point, I think it's not that great. But when he found when he saw that there was an idol clue, I think instead of abandoning this thought, he used it to bolster the next phase of the plan. So while at first I don't know if he had a direction with where he was going with it, I think he was able to kind of tie in all these like random pieces together. Clearly there was something happening with Jared. There was something that was chopped out of that. I can't see why he would play an idol on him if there wasn't some sort of bond or some sort of argument or distrust or something. But I think he was able to save the Jared thing, bring in the chicken idol thing, throw Adam under the bus, get the real idol, and somehow weave together a coherent story that the rest of the tribe bought in order to keep his name off the bottom. And I think that's why he was a good player. I think episode one, no. Episode two, yes. So I don't know if anyone else out there agrees with that. But I think he was just so fun to watch.
The Jared thing is beyond me as to why he played the idol on Jared. That made no sense to me other than him saying that he needed just to not be seen as somebody who had an idol. And as long as he had an idol, people were going to be coming for him. But they only knew that he had an idol because he's like walking around with it and then showing people. Did he show people the chicken idol so people wouldn't think he had the real one? Like, oh, that's his stupid idol, but it's not real. So I really don't understand what he did by playing the idol for Jared.
No, surely he showed the people he was with that he had the real idol. And this was cut out of my game as well. I think that. So the night that I played my idol and Kate went home, just before Tribal Council had said, okay, this is crazy because there were so many fights that didn't make the episode that night because Kate was going mental. I said, look, I'm playing my idol tonight and I'm playing it. You can trust that I'm playing it. Everyone here knows I'm playing it. We're going to Tribal Council now. And I played it, but the show made it look like I just whipped it out of my bag. And I have a feeling, and that's why I didn't get enough votes to go home because everyone knew I was going to play it. And I have a feeling that that's the same kind of thing. I have a feeling that he pulled it out. That's why everyone kind of shifted the plan away from him and he was brought into the fold. And in that moment, what are you going to do? Play it on yourself? That looks extra greedy. If you're safe, you play it and play it on someone else and build some sort of trust. Do you agree? Like, I'm sure that's what happened.
But why wouldn't they show us that? I mean, I'm sure that he gave some sort of a confessional saying like, yeah, I showed everybody my idol, but am I going to play it? I don't know. I'll wait and I'll see how that's going to go. Like, I feel like that you could work that into the storyline of, okay, this could even be crazier. He might get voted out with the idol in his pocket. He might not play it.
Because I think the show is really setting him up to be this super villain, and they couldn't give any of that away until after he plays the idol and everyone's opinion and the viewers turns and becomes quite positive. And in that moment is when then we get a confessional during that when they're revealing the votes of Pete saying, I've made a good social bond with AK. And then in the next time on Survivor, they say, as you know, AK climbs the ladder, it was like villain, 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 idol play. Now he's coming back. And I feel like the show very purposefully did that.
Can we talk a little bit about Adam and what he was doing in this episode? Because I really felt like that he was set up very well. I felt like everything was going his way and he totally just blew up his own game. I mean, I don't know if like we're giving a lot of credit to AK, but I think that Adam just self-destructed. And I really don't know how this was possible.
If Adam hadn't have self-destructed, I feel like there's no way that AK could have pulled all those things together. AK was lucky in the fact that there was another big schemer out there that was also rubbing people the wrong way. And AK was the beneficiary of that. And I feel like we were as well. And I think Adam had potential to be a really good character. And I think that he knows the game well. And you know, Adam's someone who came out in the pregame press. I don't know if you saw any of it, but he came out and said, I'm going to play better than anyone in season one. They didn't know what they were doing or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that he had the potential to do that. But it's in that moment where he goes over to the island with Lockie and with Ziggy and he says, and then they're like, well, where is the idol? Like, do you have it? And he goes, just vote me out. And I think he was trying something that would show loyalty or show that he was willing to take a bullet for them and hope that it would turn around the other way. And I think in that moment, he just did the best that he could with the information he had and it came across so bad. And he had already had an absolute blinder when he was speaking with Tara on the beach just beforehand, where he stuffed up his words there and got her offside. And I just think in that space of an hour, everything came undone for him. And the poor bloke, I just feel so bad for him. I reckon in that moment he could see the game drifting away from him, and that just causes you to make even more mistakes.
Yeah, he had like two or three really terrible moments in a row because he had AK dead to rights where AK saw the clue.
Yes.
He realized that AK saw the clue in the boat. He goes to his group and he tells Tara and that whole crew, hey, look, you guys distract AK. I'm going to get the idol clue and I'll come back and share it with you guys.
Everything was so good.
That was like,
so good.
I would say, okay, AK, this is how you do it. This guy is going to show you. You think you're the real badass on this tribe. It's really Adam. And then he went and then like was so petulant about going to go look for the idol immediately. Like, you could have waited. You could have brought a group that, you know, there was pushback from everybody. You know, then he did it on his own. And then he tried to recruit people to go look for it. And then he has that terrible moment with Locke over in the woods where he says that I guess you guys should just vote me out then.
Yeah.
And he's like, what? Why would you say that? That was so weird.
Yeah. And look, Lockie's reaction was great. He was like, that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Like, what are you saying right now? Like, and it's like, and you could tell in Lockie's head, like, wow, this is spinning really quickly. And my favorite line of the whole thing was like, Ziggy afterwards is like, can we get out of here? Like, it's like, she was just like, this is so cringe and I don't want anything to do with it. Can we please get out of here? Like, I thought that was brilliant because it showed just how awkward. I think, you know, you watch these awkward moments on reality TV and you never know if they really are that awkward because they can pause and they can put music. That one was 100% awkward. Like, there's no doubt about that. And it's so good. So good to watch.
Yeah. And there was really no coming back from that for Adam, even though he still had his core group. Then it just seemed like AK had better social connections from that point on.
I tell me what you thought about the move of him trying to get his alliance to go over to the island to look for it. Obviously, he shouldn't have gone over there on his own in the first place. But then he comes back and AK goes over and that kind of lights a fire of him like he needs to do something. His delivery was so wrong. His delivery to Tara and Ziggy and Kate was really, really off. But I understand his frustration. It was like, if we don't do this, he is going to get it. So can we please work together on it? And they were like, nah, rather build the shelter. And his frustration made him just seem really, really off. But you could tell all three girls were on the same page. Mm-hmm. And how do you feel? What were your thoughts in that moment? Were you frustrated with Tara and the way she was reacting?
No, I wasn't. I think it was a bad read for Adam because I think that he sort of got all wrapped up in the individual glory of, yes, I found the idol clue. I'm going to be the one to find the idol. I'm outsmarting AK. He felt like he was caught in this sort of like mano-a-mano battle against AK. And then he sort of realizes, oh, I'm going to get outfoxed here. I'm about to lose this battle. Quick, everybody help me on that. And it was really, Tara had a moment with AK and she had a moment with Adam. But and she had the same sort of moment where that there was where she was throwing up and then AK came up to her and didn't ask, are you okay? He asked, are we okay? And that really upset her. And then she was trying to get, you know, their situation set, you know, their shelter built. And Adam was like, no, we need to worry about the idol. But I mean, for all intents and purposes, this is a 12 person tribe. It's a 55 day game. If AK has the idol, I mean, that it's not the end of the world. Like, there's a lot of ways to play this. So, you know, AK finding the hidden immunity idol on day 4 is like, so what? Like, if your alliance doesn't think it's a big deal, then you can work around that. This is not like you're at the final 5 and, okay, he's got the idol, he's going to win the game. It's, you know, you it's a known factor and you can sort of work around it.
Yeah, look, I agree to some extent. And I think that it's the reason why I was frustrated with it watching it is because, and again, not to bring it back to my season, but when I went for that idol clue with the poem and all that moral dilemma and all that stuff, I didn't want the idol for myself because I was scared of what it would do, but I just wanted it to not be in Andy's hands or Barry's hands or someone that I wanted gone. And it frustrated me when my alliance didn't help me look for it. But now I see that it's exactly what you're talking about. I was thinking of like, well, why aren't they helping me get it? And it's like, well, exactly, Nick, you dickhead. Like they're trying to help you. Like, what about their game? And I think that is kind of what I couldn't see at the time, and I now see in Adam's gameplay.
You'll be so good when you go back now, Nick.
No, I'm very comfortable watching from my couch with a full belly and a warm jumper on.
Yeah.
Can we move on? We've spoken about AK and that a lot, and he was definitely the center of a lot of talk. That tribal council that night, we get votes going to Annalise, votes going to Adam. We had a question. So the breakdown was Adam got 5 votes, Kate got 2, AK only got 1, and Annalise gets 4. So Annalise right. becomes the decoy. What are your thoughts on Annalise and kind of like what was happening there?
You know, I wasn't able to really tell if Adam really was targeting Annalise at some point or if that was just something that AK made up. Did you were you able to detect that if she was actually somebody that was on the chopping block?
No, I think she definitely was on the chopping block from the other side. I really do think that they were, you know, because if you look at who voted for it, was Adam, Tessa, Tarzan, and even Ziggy. Like these are, this seems to be like that side was targeting Annalise. I think they had the same kind of idea that, look, AK probably does have the idol. We'll split it and we'll vote for Annalise and then AK will be our backup. And they probably thought, and I'd love to get some clarification from him when I speak to him, because I am doing exit interviews, by the way.
Oh.
It's been confirmed. Yeah, it's been confirmed.
Congratulations.
Yeah, so I'll be doing those tomorrow and I'll be speaking with all 3 guests in a row, 10 minutes each, getting a nice, good wrap up of what happened in the first
week. That's fantastic. I'll stay tuned.
Yeah, it's a big get. I'm really excited. So I will be trying to clarify exactly what happened there, but I think Adam and his crew were thinking that the other 7 were with them and they were going to split the vote. And Annalise, there was a question that came in on Twitter and it was, sorry, just give me one second, I've lost it now. This is from Jennifer at JenniferWire8905. Was Annalise's vote at the second tribal council? Oh, that's the second tribal council. We'll save that. Okay. But I think Annalise is an interesting character because she clearly knows the game. I'm really interested. I think she does funny confessionals, and I think that she's definitely one to watch because her name was on the chopping block the first time. And in the second tribal council as well, she was a factor. So, any thoughts on her? Or I think she's one to watch.
Yeah. My question with her is when AK comes up to her and says, like, hey, just so you know, Adam asked me if I was good to vote you out. And then he gave me a fist bump. Did that actually happen? Or was that did AK make that up? It's sort of like what came first, the chicken idol or the egg, in terms of like, did he plant that AK seed and then get her all paranoid? And that's what sort of made her sort of start to scramble. And then that's the egg part of this chicken idol or the egg. And then is that why she ended up on the chopping block? Was that all from AK or was she actually getting under that side skin?
Yeah, I have no idea.
Do you know how complicated and fun things can get with 12 people?
Yeah, you're right. And how complicated it can get if the cast is correct. And I think this cast is great. We've spent a lot on episode 2. We'll come back. We'll circle back to episode 1 and the other tribe. But while we're on this group, let's just quickly touch on episode 3. And because I thought that was another good episode. And I didn't know who was going home. I had a feeling it wasn't going to be Tessa because the show seemed to be narratively investing in her for the future.
Yes.
But I thought that it was great to see the emergence of Tessa, someone who really hadn't said much in the first 2 episodes. And all of a sudden she's all over the show and she's got these, you know, great lines and she seems to be working hard to try and get herself out of the bottom. What were your thoughts on Tessa?
No, I really did like Tessa. I was starting to get worried that she wasn't going to make it through this episode. But I thought she was a very fun player. I mean, that it almost came back around for her that they were going to split the vote and she was trying to get AK and Jared to vote with her and Kate. You know, it's just I think that she was probably beating a dead horse a little bit with Tara and the flipping thing.
Yeah. And that's what I wanted to talk about, because what makes a flipper, Rob? What makes a flipper? You tell me. You are the font of knowledge. You are a flipper. Tell me.
Yeah. I mean,
what do you think? Yeah. That was a big debate.
So can you have flipped when you did not vote with a group? At what point does it become a sort of this adulterous move of doing the flip where it's like, hey, we intend to vote together, but then if I did not ultimately vote with you once before, is it actually a flip, or did I ultimately just have second thoughts on it?
Yeah. Yeah, the question came in from Megan at Darling Megan 11. She said, please explain to me how Tara did not flip in voting out Adam. Hashtag, I don't get it. So Tara says, and if you, because yeah, I went back and watched
out,
the episode.
Stepping out is the correct nomenclature. Yeah.
Stepping out versus flipping and pretty much the same thing. If you watch the episode again, and I think that Tara, what's sitting on her couch, knowing what was coming at that tribal council, would have been absolutely spewing that she saw this, that they played this confessional. She says, I made my decision to flip. If I have to flip, I'll flip. And that clearly was recorded before that tribal council. Mm-hmm. And I think that she said it herself. Now, I understand you want to preserve, you know, your appearance within the tribe, but I think she knows herself that it was flipping because she actually said it herself that it was flipping. And I think that, yes, there hadn't been a vote, but I'd still consider that a flip. Would you? Yes? No?
I mean, that I think it's in the eye of the beholder. To me, it's not that big of a deal. I mean, who cares? I mean, she's trying to damn her with that. Like, oh, wait, hold on. Do we want this Tara in our alliance if she's a flipper? Should we get rid of her? It's like, well, aren't you guys now flipping on her? So,
and that's what Peter pointed out. And Peter had a great line. He said, I want to point out the irony that what Tessa is trying to get AK to do is what she's berating Tara for. And I thought that was really good on Peter.
No, people don't like when you point out the irony of what they're saying. But here's what I want to know from you, Nick. We had where AK had to make this decision of who to go for, Kate or Tessa. And we know from the previous episode that out of nowhere, he starts talking about a chicken idol. We find out that Kate is the person he wanted to vote for. He couldn't trust her once he found out she doesn't eat fast food. Coincidentally, KFC has been added as one of the sponsors for Australian Survivor Season 2. Do you think that he is a plant sent in by KFC to incorporate all of this like hype for fast food and chicken?
Do you know what? I think you're onto something. Yeah. And I think does the K stand for Kentucky?
KFC. Like, yeah.
AKFC. I like it. I think that if you find out that Kate doesn't eat KFC or fast food, you keep her in. There's going to be a Hungry Jack's reward.
Yeah.
There's going to be a KFC reward. And you keep her there because when there's like an extra drumstick up on the line, she's not going to eat it. That becomes yours.
Yeah, so bad play, AK.
That's the worst. You know, all these moves he did, that was the worst one.
Yeah. But I did like the hustle from Tessa. I felt like that she was a really fun player, and I hope that she sticks around for a while.
Yeah, it was great. I love that's the tenacity that you need at Tribal Council. I think that she thought she was going home and she wanted to swing big. Do I think that what she said changed their minds? No, I think they went in knowing that they were going to vote for Kate. And I think that while they were sitting there, Tara was like, damn it, why didn't we make it Tessa? But I really do. But then I stumbled on something and I want to know what you think. So when I was looking at the votes, it was 2 votes for Tara, but then it was 4 votes for Kate and 4 votes for Tess. And then it was whatever Tarzan did, and Tarzan ended up voting for Kate.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that what the group was trying to do, other than the 3 people on the side, I actually think that they were trying to split the vote on a 4-4. And it just so happened that Tarzan didn't vote for Tara and decided to keep Tessa. Now, whether that was because he liked Tessa more or the major alliance got into his ear, I wonder who they would have actually voted for if it did go 3-4-4 and then on the revote.
Oh, that's really interesting. So Tarzan screwed up the revote. You know, it was, I thought it was a little out of place where we saw Tessa ask Tarzan, hey, can you go look for the idol for me? Everybody's watching me. I can't do it. But then it didn't pan out. We didn't see him come back with an idol. And then maybe he will in the future. But I thought that was like, well, why was that in there if there was no reason? And maybe we'll see either an idol down the road, or it's like, yeah, you know, I put my vote on Kate. I wanted to make sure that Tessa wasn't around. He talked about her as his friend.
Yeah, I'd say that's what they're doing. They're trying to kind of build up this idea that Tarzan, because he said just before they vote, she says, I think I need a miracle. And then Tarzan goes, oh, miracles. This is where miracles happen every day. I think he worked his miracle. I think he voted for Kate and she stayed. And I think that idol thing will bear fruit later. So I'm glad that it worked out that way. I liked Kate. I thought that she had potential. She really did. And she was great in the challenges, and I'm looking forward to chatting to her. But Tessa was probably the one to watch in that one.
Yeah.
Can we just, before we move on from this tribe, there was this little altercation between Lockie and Tarzan, and we've set them up as like father-son.
Father-son.
It was about the tarp. Can you confirm what I'm about to say, okay? You ready? This is a thing that I don't think people know. Ready? Tarps on Survivor do not work. Discuss.
You know, I'm trying to think if we did the tarp that we had in Panama in the All-Stars, that was a lifesaver. But again, that was a group of six. I mean, that if you have a tarp and it's like this really big group, at what point did you have a tarp in a smaller tribe or just at the merge?
No, I had a tarp when I was in a tribe of eight. I had a tarp when I was in with five. When I was with 13, I had two tarps. Tarps don't work. And I think that this is something, this was the biggest surprise of all my time out on that I
left. What do you mean it doesn't work? Leaks?
No, it leaks. They leak. They drip through. It's not the fact about the size. Tarzan says it's the size of a hanky, but it's not that. They leak. And do you know what, everyone? Don't get excited if you go on Survivor and they say, and what you really want is a tarp. No, what you want is a chair. You want like a pillow.
Whoa.
That might get sick. Yeah. I'm planting the flag. You wanted hot takes. This is the hottest take of all. Tarps on Survivor suck.
Nick, I've never heard this take before. And yeah, I've talked to so many different Survivors. I'm wondering if they're buying cheap tarps for the Australian Survivor players. They're buying like off-brand tarps.
They're like pricking holes through it.
Use tarps.
No, they pull water, and when the water pools, they soak through. Anyway, enough on that, but that's a hot take.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see. We need somebody to play in both games, and then they can tell us. But I've never heard this from any American Survivor player. Tarps suck.
Dude. Can we move over to the Asaga tribe? What are your thoughts?
My number one thought about the Asaga tribe is that I love Luke so much, that Luke is fantastic. I think Luke might be my favorite person in the season. To me, he reminds me a lot of Tyson in that he's just like this really mischievous player in the game who has a little bit of this complex of like, he doesn't want to do what the authority in the tribe wants to do. And he's going to do whatever he feels like, and whatever he feels like is going to be the most fun. And we saw him really shake up that first vote. I don't know if it was going to go cleanly, and ultimately not be a tie, and Joan was going to go home. And I'm sure we can talk that through. I love that he was making up spy shacks. I love his relationship with Jericho. He's just really, really fun to have on the show.
Yeah, I think he's such good TV, and I'm glad he's out there. But do you know what? I'm really glad that he wasn't on season one, because playing with someone like him would be so difficult. It would be so different. Not from a personality point of view. Like, that's a whole – we don't know him. We're only getting a small slice of his personality. But from a game perspective, I think he would be like the worst thing you could have on tribe, because he just wants to mess stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great as a viewer. Like, I am loving it. I'm loving it. But could you imagine trying to work around that when you're a rational player that wants to kind of, you know, use people as chess pieces? He's just grabbing the board, and he's like every like person you've ever played Monopoly with at the end, gets frustrated, just flips the board upside down.
Right.
And but such good TV.
Yeah. Some people just want to watch the world burn. And that's a little bit of Luke's prerogative. It's just like, he's got his group of people, and he just feels like, oh, wouldn't it be so fun? Let's mess with them. They think they have this plan. Like, screw their plan. Let's just do this. Why? Yeah. Who cares?
You don't control me.
Yeah.
I'm going to mess things up.
Yeah.
He's great.
He's really, really fun. And he seems like he's a big fan. He talked about his bucket list. If you don't have playing Survivor on your bucket list, you know, there's something wrong with your list, he says in the first episode. He's got a great story. You know, he's got these two kids. I think that he said that they're both autistic.
I think he said one's autistic and the other one is like tracking that way or something like that, because they are quite young.
Yes. So, I mean, a great story. I mean, and just like, what a personality, that he's not like coming into the show with like trying to say like, oh, you know, I have this story, and, you know, and like, he's not like playing anything up for sympathy. He just seems like he's just like a really fun, outrageous personality.
Yeah, and you're right. The cuddle buddy with Jericho, it's a little kid shot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was good. But the Spy Shack thing I thought was a bit, you know, it was great. I'm glad someone's doing it, but like, I don't think Spy Shack's work. And I think that that's just more like the last thing he watched was Tony. I was watching the episode with my wife, and Christine says, she's like, he's more Rodney than Tony.
Oh, that's a burn. You know, Stephen and I talked about this last season of, you know, that there is a little bit of like being able to plant your flag on something. Like, I think that we talked about last season of like, you know, somebody could come into Australian Survivor and say, I am the Dragon Slayer. That's me. And then it's like, okay, you could just run with it. And it's like, okay, well, I guess that you could, like, there's no sort of recognition of, okay, this is like a, you know, something, a bit that's already been done in US Survivor. You can sort of like run a play and just say you invented it.
Yes. Yeah. Especially with like the fact that a lot of the audience might not have seen American Survivor. So I think that people, the audience would have loved that. But yeah, it's, oh God, so hard to play with. So hard to play with. Luke is loose. This is what Michelle says. That tie, I don't know, have we ever had a tie like that in the first episode? I'm sure we have. I can't quite remember.
Yes, Survivor Redemption Island, I think, went to a tie in the very first vote. I'm pretty sure when Francesca went home. Pretty sure. Yeah.
I'm just wondering, like, what was Luke hoping for, like, with the tie, like, because, like, I don't know if he was thinking it through too much and he just wanted to mess it up. But yeah, I don't know if that was ever going to work. But yeah, I don't know.
Do we know, was Joan the target of the group the whole time?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Joan was a target from the majority. He wanted to shake things up and make it a tie. And then I think he was hoping that on the revote, then Kent would go home, but I can't see that happening. And I still think it was weird that people were still voting for Kent on the revote. I don't know. And I can't believe there's been no blowback. I'm sure there has been, but they haven't shown it.
Yeah.
In the battle between Joan versus Kent, which horse would you?
Yeah, and just to fact check, I think it might have been a 4-3-2 vote on Francesca, so maybe not a tie vote to send Francesca out on the first night. That being said, I was pro Kent. I liked Kent more than Joan. I felt like the writing was on the wall with Joan when we saw her heading into the challenge, talking about how she wanted a puzzle. She's like, I'm really great at puzzles. And they put her on the puzzle. And I said, I don't think this is going to end well. And then you had Kent. And I just loved Kent's line. I thought that he seemed like he was going to be funnier. I wasn't like a huge Kent fan, but I loved what he said. And I'm going to say this only because he said it on the show. I think it's okay to talk about here. But he said basically he was playing by the dickhead strategy and you have a big group. And it's so you say, okay, you just point out who the dickhead is. And you know what? If you're in a group and you can't find the dickhead, it's you.
That, I'm sorry. That is one Ken of the best, confessionals, the best thoughts. It's so Australian. It's so Australian. Like, we use the word dickhead, like, you know, like it's gotten out of fashion. And it's just the best. It was the best. And the fact that he said the word dickhead 40 times in like a minute is just so Australian.
Yeah.
That and his little Speedo.
Adelaide.
Adelaide, yes.
Your hometown.
That's right. Go Adelaide. I need to get my Speedo. So. Yeah. I was loving Kent. I was also liking Joan, but you know, the escape room thing. She was sold in the commercials, and you wouldn't have seen the commercials, but the ones that aired here is Cyclone Joan is coming. And I don't know if they really, you know, she did that.
But, it rhymed. It rhymed.
But yeah.
I felt like there was a little bit of cardio shaming of Joan as well. Also. Yes, there was a lot of definitely. Like, I don't think she's good at cardio. And she might not be as good at cardio as some of the other people in the tribe.
I feel like they were grasping at straws as to why she went home.
I've never heard that term before. Like that. Yeah, she seems like she could be cardio challenged. I think that that's probably a good reason to get rid of her.
What about the sleep shaming? Forget slut shaming. What about sleep shaming? Yeah. This is a new thing that is coming.
She slept too much, and so we got to get rid of her. Maybe if she was up working harder. Then she wouldn't. But survivors are so petty. They'll come up with anything that you do, and they'll make it a reason to vote you out. Of like, oh, you're eating too much. You're not eating enough. You don't eat fast food. You know, they, anything that happens, like, okay, that's the reason why I want that person to go.
Couple of little things from that tribe. There's a, you know, we have the Sam and Mark thing, which is Sam is my female winner pick from before the season. I don't know how I'm feeling about that now. I think she's good, but I don't know how she's going to last. But I just don't know why you would go so overtly, have such a bond and all the cuddling. We just saw Elle and Lee.
Yeah.
Like, we just saw Elle and Lee. And it's kind of like how straight after season 8 in American there was all that, got to break up any couple, because we saw Rob and Amber, any couple, you got to break it up. And I think it's a miscalculation. And I know we only saw a little bit of it, but if Jackie's mentioning it, then everyone's seeing it. I think it's a miscalculation to attach yourself to someone. She kind of looks like Elle a little bit. She's got the same little overalls that Elle had. I just don't know if you should be doing that when we saw that they became second and third.
Yeah, I don't know if it's exactly a romance I'm not saying it is.
Yeah. I'm not saying it's a romance, but it's two young, good-looking people snuggling together, working together. He was picking her up and carrying her to the log. We just said Survivor's so petty. You can't be doing things like that.
No, you shouldn't be doing it. But to me, I feel like that this is a real like manipulation on the part of Sam, that we saw her by the third episode. She was being described as the watchdog or the attack dog. That's what Jackie was saying about Mark and the Sam relationship. And I really feel like that Sam is somebody who seems like she's pretty power hungry in the game. And I think that she feels like, okay, this is going to be my champion. And I'm going to, you know, have this guy sort of like out in front. And I'm going to like give him marching orders, just like that, you know, Kent ended up reporting back to Jackie and Henry. She said to him, go chase them. And so now she's got this huge guy who is going to just do her bidding, whatever she says. And I think that that's going to be somebody who, you know, it's a powerful ally for her. Unfortunately, I think she's been, as you're saying, too obvious about it.
Yeah, I think it's great to align with him, but I think it's the obviousness of it. That's but I'm so hopeful because I think she's good. I think she's going to be a good addition to the show. Someone else that got a lot of pregame buzz was Sarah.
Yes.
Any thoughts on Sarah?
Not particularly. She didn't really have a lot. I had heard in your preseason podcast that you did with Ryan, I thought that, you know, I was intrigued by her, but we saw her sort of like just like flat out lying to Joan. We saw her talk about how she's a big fan, but I feel like that she didn't have a ton to do here through these first week.
Yeah, I thought the lie to Joan was great. And you can tell that she's someone, I just think she's going to be so smooth. I think she's going to be a great liar. I think there's more to come from her. And Megan Elizabeth said, you know, can we talk about how awesome Sarah is? It's starting to come through, but I would say that of anyone, she's got the biggest potential. She was actually on another reality show. So, you know, before she was on The Face, which is like a modeling show. I don't think she's kind of put off or by the show of it all. You know, when you're filming a reality show, it takes a couple of days to get used to that. I think she can already kind of overstep that. She's young. She's good looking. She's clearly social. I think she's one to watch.
Okay. I'm in.
But the biggest story coming from the Asaga tribe, I guess, is our phony Yogi.
Yeah. Henry and his partner in crime, Jackie.
Yes. Tell me, is this the new Malcolm and Denise?
It's tracking in that area. I thought that Henry was going to be busted a little bit, but you know, he was talking about how he's going to be the yoga teacher. I mean, it kind of is the dumbest lie ever. I don't know why somebody would come in and say that. Did you feel like that this is a good story to tell people?
Do you know what? I actually do.
Yes.
I actually think it's good. And we have a really good question here, if we can read it out. This is from Kate W. at Persetemy on Twitter. She says, is Henry the first player to proactively lie about his occupation to make himself look good, i.e. aligning with kind, sensitive, hipster yoga instructor stereotype rather than the blokey laborer? Usually the occupation lie seems more of a defensive thing to hide an occupation that might make them appear threatening, i.e. police officer, athlete, detective, etc. I feel like it's kind of a good lie, especially playing it up with a man bun. And if anyone wants him to show them yoga, he can just say he's too tired embarrassed or injured to get out of his lack of expertise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Yeah, on the surface, I mean, the issue here is you're in a tribe of 12 people, and, you know, how many of these, you know, young women have been to a yoga class? And if he really doesn't know his stuff, and he happens to be with somebody who is like, oh, great, a yoga teacher. Okay, let's talk about this. And he's like, it was a risk, I think, to end up with somebody. And it's like, wait, you're not a yoga teacher. I mean, I guess he could spin it like, oh, no, well, I'm aspiring yoga teacher. They just made me say that. I didn't really want to ultimately be that. But it's an interesting choice to make. And I think it's going to be fun to see how this plays out. The thing that sort of like jumped out to me is that we do this podcast with Angie Kontz in the preseason, where she goes through and tells us about how each specific archetype in US Survivor has done. And she puts people into sort of like these categories. And the most successful category in the history of Survivor, the, you know, archetype that trends the highest is this sort of like surfer dude bro, where yeah. you have people like the Fabios and Tysons and Arises of the world. You know, that they have tracked very well with this sort of like, hey, it's all good. And, you know, peace and love and just, you know, not coming off as threatening. So I do think that there is some wisdom there to it. I mean, I generally don't like the idea of coming up with the fake occupation, but it'll be fun to see how this plays out.
Yeah, I love the liar. But I think it, in the words of Bryce, it's a lot.
It's like, a lot.
It's a lot. It's a lot to keep track of. Like, you know, and another little announcement. I'll be writing Survivor columns for OK Magazine this year. So I've sent off my first one. And, yeah. And that'll be out on stands this week. And one of the column that I wrote this week is about Henry and the lie. And I just think that the game demands so much of you already. That do you really want to overload yourself with another lie you have to keep track of? And I think, and you know, people are so down and like, you know, oh, another person lying about things. Like last year we had Evan lying about being a drama teacher. This year we've got Mark and Tara who are not telling people, you know, I'm a barrel racer. Like no one can know that. I do think that I give people a pass because it gets you on the show. Like it gets you on, like it might not bear fruit on the show, but like it gets the producers interested. No way, like, or not no way, but like the chance that Henry would have been chosen had he just said, oh, I'm a laborer with really good hair. Yeah, he might have got on, but like this makes him so much more interesting. So I feel like sometimes they say these things, they get on the island and they're like, damn, now I actually have to come good on this promise.
Yeah. Nick, what is the best job somebody needs to lie about in a future season of Survivor and say that they are?
Ooh, that's a really good question. It needs to be something that people respect but aren't intimidated of. And I think that's what I've figured out. You can't say like people respect doctors and that, but they're intimidated by people's smarts and their money and stuff like that. So I think that people aspire to be healthy like yoga instructors, but they're not threatened because they, you know, maybe not seen as having, you know, too much over them in terms of, you know, education or money and stuff like that. So I don't know. Maybe yoga instructor is the ideal. Do you have another one?
I'm trying to think. The downside for me with yoga instructor is that I hear yoga instructor and then I'm saying, okay, this person is going to end up being really good in the challenges. So I'm thinking like, okay, this person's going to be able to win all the endurance challenges. It's almost like they're too healthy. They've got too much going on. Is there some cousin of yoga instructor where it's like, okay, well, you know, maybe I think that maybe Jim Rice had it all wrong, where I think that he was working and he owned like a marijuana dispensary. And I think that he should have come in and just and told people that, where it's like, OK, yeah, that this well, the people that you people have, you know. So I was thinking, OK, well, you get sort of like the same, you know, yoga instructor vibe. It's like, OK, but they're, you know, might not be able to have like go in deep into endurance challenges. But you might have somebody who's sort of like anti that whole scene.
Yeah, so. I think that's going to maybe like more conservative people might.
I don't know. Well, the commenters will figure it out.
Please hit us up on Twitter in the comments. We would love to hear what you think the ideal thing is. So we've got this bond between Henry and Jackie. You know, Jackie, someone asked me, Scott Schaffer said in the question, what exactly is a marriage celebrant? Do you guys not have that term in America?
A marriage celebrant, is that somebody who like makes people be married in a celebration?
Yeah, it's like what did Steven do for JT? What would you call that?
Oh, he gave him $1 million, Nick. they do like charitable donations.
The other awesome thing that he did.
So he performs a wedding ceremony.
Yeah. What's that called in America?
I don't know, I think that you would be like a some sort of you know, it's hard because it's usually you know done in some sort of religious ceremony, but
exactly when, you know, it's someone who marries people. David Bloomberg was like, yeah, I thought it was someone who went and celebrated at a wedding, but no, it's someone who
marries people. AK.
I think the Henry Jackie thing is good. They've got this idol now, which is great. Can I just, fun fact for everyone, Henry, AK, myself, it seems like Adelaide is the place where you find, you know, if you want to find an idol, come from Adelaide. just throwing it out there.
Where's Kent's idol?
Yeah, it's in his speedo, mate. It's in his speedo. What did you think about Henry throwing the challenge?
Well, because it would have been good if he threw the challenge. I don't know what he did. He's like, well, if I can't make them lose, then this tribe is never going to lose a challenge.
The backwards paddling was great. Mm. And I was so hoping that he was just, I was like, we were on the couch yelling, pull it. We just wanted him to go and pull one of the things out from the bottom of that Jenga stack. That would have made my day. But how would you rate his attempt in terms of the throwing challenge, the challenge throwing performances?
Well, I mean, it's not, you know, not great. I mean, when somebody's trying to throw the challenge, I mean, I think back to the Braun tribe back in Survivor Kageyan, where they were trying to throw the challenge and ultimately they were done in by that Cliff Robinson got to bring up the rear in terms of shooting basketballs at the end versus Spencer. But did you like the move of throwing the challenge here? Because I'm saying, what the hell are you thinking here when it's so early in such a long game? Like, there's not going to be an opportunity to get rid of Sam down the road. And he says, oh, I'm going to use the idol to get Sam out tonight. Yeah. And I'm like, wow. Well, what are you going to tell everybody to vote for you? And then you and Jackie, you're going to vote, write down Sam's name. What is this plan?
I'll default back to Bryce on this one. Do you have a soundbite for me?
I should. I'll get that one when we get back to the Survivor season.
Yeah, it's too much. It's too much. You don't want to waste an idol. I think it's great TV. Henry was my preseason male winner pick, and he's from Adelaide, and I'm rooting for him. But it is probably too much. But I love watching people try and throw challenges. Ever since PG and Jamie Dugan, like that was one of the best. That's in my top 10 Survivor moments.
Nick, if I could impart one piece of wisdom to you, I feel like you can't be doing a male and female pick. You got to just go strong to the hole. Go with one.
No,
nobody's going to respect you then if
no
you get
way.
Like
I am
you
hedging,
pick two
hedging.
People.
I'm
I know
hedging.
There's 24 people, but then they'll say, yeah, but you pick two.
If it was 20 people, I'd stick with one, but there's no way you're getting me to pick one out of 24
people. There's no glory
people.
In two picks.
We don't get videos like you guys get in America. We get like four sentences with grammar errors in them on the Survivor website. I'm picking two people. So, but I guess if I had to say out of the two, I would lean more towards Henry. But even that, I don't see it panning out anymore. I've never picked a person. I'm not going to start getting them right now.
Okay.
Can I move over to a little game that I want to play with you, Rob?
I would love to.
Are you feeling lucky?
Yes. I mean, are we done with things from the week that I feel like we didn't even talk about? Naked Lockie.
Sure. Let's do it. Let's what else you got for me? Naked Lockie. I didn't know you were such a fan of Naked Lockie.
Naked
the whale. I didn't know you were a fan of the whale.
Yeah, a lot. That why do you call him the whale? That's his name.
That's what Jonathan says when he's like, Lockie doing the whale. And then later on, he was He was jumping out of the water doing the Come on, Rob. Okay. Come on, Rob. Sorry. Do you love Lockie so much? You were just blinded by the buns.
That to me, you know, you always feel like you have a certain like interest in like the people that you see as like the version of you in like a future season as a veteran, and sort of like I always identify with the manliest survivor that was out there.
Yes,
but really,
yes. Are you getting a strength and honor tattoo putting on on your chest? Is that what you're doing?
Yes, but really, the women could not control themselves around Lockie. And then once Lockie, then he lost his underwear in the challenge. Was he wrestling Mark at that point? Everybody needed to just out of breath.
The thirst is real. The thirst is real.
Yeah,
and Jonathan. Does it get any thirstier than Jonathan? When the two guys, before they'd even stripped down, when they walked past, he was like, whoa. Like, Jonathan, I thought I was crushed. I'm supposed to be your crush. You're only supposed to have eyes for me.
Yeah. Australian Survivor really going all in on the like naked Greco-Roman wrestling this season.
Oh, it's great.
What do you think about Jonathan's boat? Is that a new invention for season two?
Oh, my gosh. Jonathan on that chariot with the string and the rope, and he's holding it like his might, like it's a stallion riding a stallion. Like he is just drifting around, drifting into my dreams. Like I am obsessed with Jonathan LaPaglia. I think he is the funniest. He is. You can do no wrong. And every night I hope he's going to sail in and sweep me off my feet on his little boat chariot thing.
Yeah. On a serious note, I thought that Luke, again, I loved Luke so much that I thought he had a really interesting piece of wisdom that he said. When somebody tells you this is the plan, it means that you're not in the alliance. Like if you were in the alliance, they'd be talking to you about coming up with the plan. But when you're hearing, okay, here's the plan, you are on the outs. And I thought that was, I've never heard it articulated that way before.
Who said this, Luke?
Luke said that, yeah. When they told him, okay, here's the plan. We're going to vote out Joan tonight. And he's like, oh, I don't like here. This is the plan.
Wow. Love it.
Yeah.
That's good. It's very true. It's very true. And it's one of the things that I spoke about a lot last season when I was on, like, I think I spoke about it with you, that if you are in the decoy vote, then you're not part of the plan either because your vote can't be trusted. Mm-hmm. And I think it kind of fits in with that. It's like if you're being told to vote for the decoy, like because no one wants to vote for the decoy. You want to vote for the person who goes home because it looks better on your record that you voted for the person who went home. And I just think that there's so many little things like that that Survivor teaches you. And I cannot believe that Luke articulated it in his first few days out there. Well done.
Yeah, no, he's really good. I mean, that's why I feel like he is like a Tyson, where it's like that I think you just expect him to be like this wacky character, but he seems like he does have some knowledge about the game. So I think he's a really, really fun.
Any other hot takes?
No. 21,000 people applied for this show. Is that right?
That's true.
Wow.
Very true.
Okay.
How many people apply on an American season on average? Do you know the numbers?
I don't know, but I can't imagine that it's, that high at this point, right? I think they kind of found everybody, no?
It was 15,000 for season one, and that's spiked to 21. So, I don't want to be the person sifting through all those videos.
The only thing I will say is that in the openings, like with the previously on Survivor, so Jonathan has a way of talking about everybody where he puts their job title before their name. So he'll be talking about how like, and so wedding videographer AK decided to go and look for the clue that poker player Adam left in the boat. Meanwhile, minor Luke. And to me, it's very utopia in terms of everybody that's getting their job title. I needed a doomsday prepper out there.
Barrel racer Tara told lime farmer Mark.
And teacher Nick went on to do a podcast.
Oh, that's great. Let's transition to now, the moment I've been waiting for. We're going to play a little game, and I need to do a massive shout out to my little intern helper, Shannon Gates.
Yes.
The great Shannon Gates.
Yes.
She is follow her on Twitter. She has hot takes aplenty while she's watching. Her and I came up with this little game that we wanted to kind of test you out. And it started from this idea of the duck's nuts, right? Mm-hmm. And all these Australian idioms that people just don't know in America. And I feel like it's my job to educate. And if you could indulge me in a little game I would like to play, and that game is called Idiot or Idiom. How do you feel about that?
I love it. I love it. Thank you for including me in this game, and thank you for educating. You know, you have worldwide listeners, not just in the U.S. and Canada and all these other countries, and you can bring Australian culture to the masses now.
Well, with Shannon's help, I think we're going to really do some good here. I think this is going to be the best educational moment I have as a teacher all year.
Yeah, Teacher Nick, back at it.
All right, so podcaster Rob, what you need to do is I'm going to give you a phrase and you need to tell me whether it is an Australian idiom or if it's something that Shannon and I have made up, okay?
Okay.
All right, and you get extra points, and then I'll probably ask you for you to tell me what it actually means as well, but that's not the game. The game is it an idiom or is it not?
Okay.
You ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, let me just get myself sorted here. All right, the first idiom, sparrows fart.
Sparrows fart. Can you use it in a sentence or no?
No.
Okay. I will say I think that is real, sparrows fart. I would feel like that it's probably something that, you know, it's very descriptive and it's sort of like, you know, a sparrow is a very small bird. A sparrow's fart, I think, would be something that would be probably like not a big deal. So if you wanted to sort of like, oh, that was nothing. That was a sparrow's fart.
You are correct that it is real. Okay, well
on,
done.
Hold on.
Ding, ka-ching, ka-ching.
There we go. That's what we need. Okay. But you're wrong in what it means. It means to wake up at sparrow's fart. Like, what time did you wake up today? Sparrow's fart. Like, really, really early on.
Oh, well, that part makes no sense.
None of them do. Okay, yeah. Next one. Kicking the goat.
What, doing what to the goat?
Kicking the goat. What do you reckon?
Kicking the goat. I mean, that seems mean to kick the goat. The Australians, I feel like that you guys are rowdy, but not necessarily mean-spirited. Kick the goat, I will say, is not an Australian expression.
Another one on the board. Well done.
Ka-ching.
There we go. Don't kick the goat. No. There we go. So you're on two now.
Yes.
Next one. To say she's a lamb.
She's a lamb.
How was Jennifer? Oh, she's a lamb.
Yes. Okay. Well, I'm getting context on that. So
yeah,
I will say she's a lamb. Yeah, I think it could mean that she's nice. I mean, I don't know if we want to sort of really start to talk about livestock in that manner. But I will say I'll buy it. Sure. That's a phrase.
Give me Kimmy Kappenberg on that one. That's a no.
That's not right.
Exactly. Next one. To say you've got Buckley's.
Buckley's. Now I don't know what a Buckley is, but I feel like you guys wouldn't just make up a word. So I will say you got Buckley's is weird enough that I feel like it must be something, but what it could mean, I have no idea.
Ding ka-ching. Well done. That is
ding,
a real one.
Ka-ching, ka-ching.
What does it mean?
To say you've got Buckley's means you've got no chance. Okay. And I actually looked up the etymology of this. It was a convict called Buckley who escaped, and then he had a chance, ironically, to survive or something like that. So, yes, just well done. Three correct, one no, a couple more.
Okay.
To say that you're flat out like a lizard drinking.
Flat out like a lizard drinking. Boy, there's a lot of parts to that. It's a lot. I'll say that I'll buy it again. I'll say yes.
Rob, are you sure you're not Australian? Because that is correct.
Ding,
but that's just
ka-ching.
Very specific. Flat out like a lizard drinking.
Flat out like a lizard drinking needs to be really, really busy. Okay, two more. You got two more really quickly, okay?
Wait, next flat one. Out like a lizard drinking means you're busy? I thought it meant like you're passed out drunk like a lizard if a lizard consumed an alcoholic beverage.
I'm pretty sure it means to be busy. Maybe I need to double check that, but I've always used it, and the people I know use it in terms of like, yeah, I was flat out.
Okay.
Like, yeah. Okay, and two more.
Okay.
Next one. Sand saver.
You're
a real sand saver.
Okay. I'm going to say this sounds fake to me, sand saver.
Wow, you're really good at this. That is another made-up one by Shannon Gates.
Ding, ka-ching, ka-ching.
Well, you also gave context in the other one that was made up, where in the real ones, you haven't given me any context, but in the fake ones, you said, like, you know, as in, like, she's a lamb. So it's like, it's not real, so you're explaining.
Is this some emergent strategy that you worked out today?
You would tell.
Okay, I'm just gonna say
okay, I'm trying to keep it fair. I'm trying to keep it fair.
Yeah. Okay, last one. Ready?
Yes.
Piece of piss.
Piece of piss. Boy, you're a real piece of piss. I mean, that doesn't even make sense. Piece of piss. I will say, boy, you saved it for last. I'll say it's probably real.
It's real.
Yeah. Ding, ka-ching, ka-ching.
You guys saved the most outlandish one for the end. What does that mean?
Piece of piss means it's easy to achieve. It's easy. So if you say, oh, can you help me on the weekend? Yeah, no, mate, piece of piss.
Why? Why? What does it mean?
I have no idea. It just does. So.
What about duck's nuts, Nick? Was that good?
Duck's nuts means something's really good. Like it was the duck's nuts.
Okay.
And the other one that was a
delicacy? Inclusion.
No, yeah. There's one thing that I don't know if you guys have heard of. I didn't include it because I thought maybe people had heard of it. Budgie smugglers. Have you heard of those before?
No.
You've never heard of budgie smugglers?
Yeah. No. What is that? Like a Speedo?
It is a Speedo. Well done. A budgie smuggler. There you go.
A budgie. Okay.
That budgie's like a little bird.
Yes. Okay. There.
Well, there you go.
Now I know so much. Okay.
You are an honorary Australian. Good. Well done.
Well, I'd love to come to Australia one time. I know there's so many survivors that have done the trip. It's only behind doing a Reddit AMA have is more survivors come to Australia.
Is it something you think you would ever do? Come down to Australia. You've got so many fans here. Is that something that you think you could ever put on the agenda? I'm really putting you on the spot here.
Put it on the bucket list of things. And really, what kind of bucket list would I have if going to Australia one day was not part of it?
Let me tell you, it would be a piece of piss. It would not be a piece of piss, actually, to get out.
I mean, I get up as early as a sparrow's fart anyway. So, well, we'll see if I can fit it into my schedule.
Oh, that's great. Well, Rob, that kind of brings us to the end of the. I could sit here and talk for hours. Yeah. I think there was so much good stuff. We need a hashtag.
Okay.
What are you thinking?
All right. So we talked about a lot of different stuff and a lot of latecomers at the end of the episode. But
I think idiot versus idiom, idiot or idiom is the undoubted best way to propagate some hashtags late in the game.
Yes. I also think earlier on we talked about the AKFC in terms of the new product placement coming to Australian Survivor.
AKFC is good. AKFC. I also liked cardio shaming and
shaming. That's a thing.
Tarp suck was another one, but yeah. I don't know. I'm thinking that piece of piss is good, but I don't know if we can be go around saying that on Twitter.
I think you could have that as a bonus hashtag. I think give one out and then like a supplemental.
What about sparrows fart? I think.
Well,
we're
really showing our outreach to the Australian community of like we are taking on all of their again that might not be like you know that's like no big deal in Australia, right?
I think we should go with sparrows fart. I think that's, you know, it's Australian Survivor, we need an Australian hashtag. I do love AKFC.
Yeah.
But let's go with sparrows fart.
Okay. And you don't want to go with dickhead strategy. Nick, could you correctly identify the dickheads in Australian Survivor 1?
Yeah, it was me. I think in every tribe I went to, I was the dickhead.
Like,
so,
boy,
yeah.
There's no dickheads here.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
So good. So good. Well, for everyone out there listening, thank you for listening so far. We've got lots of cool stuff coming up. So like I said, I'll be chatting to the first three players voted off, and there'll be a second podcast that'll come up in the next day or so. So stay tuned for that. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Nick Iadanza. Send me your comments. A lot of great stuff coming in on Instagram as well. I've been doing a lot of work with the actual Survivor AU Instagram page and putting up my thoughts after the episode that I've been sending them to Channel 10, and they've been putting them up. So stay tuned for that as well. And yeah, as always, tell us what you think of the episode. We got hashtag Sparrows Fart, hashtag Know It Oz, and thank you so much for listening. Thank you so much for making us number four on iTunes in Australia.
How do people subscribe to the show, Nick?
Well, you can search on in your podcast. You can search for the Survivor Know It Oz, and or you can find us through your website, Rob. So please, everyone, subscribe and star ratings. Because I think it's the beginning of the season. We need people to kind of more people to come and find us. And there are new super fans in Australia joining every single day. So help everyone find the show. And just Rob, I want to thank you so much for giving Australian Survivor such a great platform to be discussed on your website and introducing us to all your awesome fans around the world. So thank you. And thank you for coming on today.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. This was really fun. I'm glad we got to do this. And I'm also just really excited about how fun these first three episodes were of the new season. And so you're killing it. And it's been very fun to be on a guest on your podcast, Nick. Thank you.
If you had told me a year or so ago that you would be a guest on my podcast on your website, I would have told you that that is a piece of piss. No way. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
I would have told you that you were kicking the goat on that one.
Yeah, you're really, really. What was it? A sand what?
Sand saver. I don't know.
Sand saver. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you're a real sand saver.
All right. All right, everyone. Take care. Thank you so much. Speak to you next week.
Bye.